Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 96. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for my co-host David Todd on this Tuesday is Alex Kozora. Alex, less than 3 weeks to go until the 2018 NFL Draft. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday, Dave. I saw on your Twitter timeline the headline, "Man claiming to be reincarnation of Jesus Christ arrested after police chase." Was that you, Dave?
No, not me. I post these things so people know they should not be leaving their house.
That's good evidence. That's compelling evidence.
I tell you, there's some nuts in this world, I tell you. Evidently, this guy couldn't escape the cops. My old man always told me when I was a kid, he said, "Dave," he said, "you can outrun a cop car, but you can't outrun a radio."
Real quick, I was watching last week because all the police chases happened in L.A., and so I was watching one that was going on for like an hour, and then they cut away from it to go to another police chase of some dude who stole an ambulance. So I was just – Los Angeles is crazy out there.
Boy, they do have some good ones. I think there's a guy I follow on Twitter. I think his name's Matthew Keys. Mm-hmm. He is great at following kind of national breaking news and posting immediately posting links to like car chases as they happen and all like that. Mm-hmm. If you're out there, make sure to search for him in your Twitter feed, because he is fantastic when it comes to breaking news nationally and local or I should say domestically as well too. So a lot of good car chases always in LA. We don't have those too often, I don't think, here in Vegas, at least that I know of. So good thing there. Okay, we have less than, well, let's see, I guess Thursday will be 2 weeks until the draft. I guess we're kind of in that area now where, into that area now about, kind of what's fiction and what's fact and some of these rumors coming out about some of these, certain players and all. Speaking of which, with the whole Rashawn Evans thing, I wasn't going to open up going this route, but I figured, while it's fresh on my mind, we'll go ahead and talk about it. What do you make of the whole Rashawn Evans thing and him, not running at either one of his pro days or at the combine? And then when you add on to that real, when you look at his overall combine numbers, what he did do at the combine, really kind of pedestrian, if you will. Now, his tape is one thing. I mean, he's got some good tape, but he was only a one-year starter at Alabama. Missed a couple back-to-back games last year because of groin injuries. And, some might say, well, he should be fully healed by that now. Now, there's been no reports as of yet that I've seen that he's been asked to, that he was flagged at the combine, or that he's been asked to go back to Indianapolis for a medical recheck. Where are you right now on Rashawn Evans?
I think I'm less bothered by it than, at least from what I've seen some people. I think the groin injury is a large portion, obviously, due with this. Even if he is healthy or getting real close to health, you can understand him not running the 40, because when has he had the ability to train for it? And you don't want to be a Sam Hubbard type situation where you're training it really late in the process and your technique's wrong and you run a really poor 40 time because of it. And then the criticism probably gets 10 times louder. Because you have an actual time instead of just a DNP. So I attribute those poor numbers and the lack of numbers mostly to that. And provided that there is nothing super serious there, which I can't really imagine that there is, because he has worked out, he has gone through everything else, and it was an injury he played through all last year. So he just hasn't had the time to rest and heal. I'd still be comfortable taking him at 28, put it that way.
He, without a doubt, should be on the board when the Steelers pick, right?
It's looking more and more like that, yeah. It looks like that, obviously Roquan Smith and Tremaine Edmonds are going to be gone. Van Der Esch, seems likely at this point to be gone, maybe well gone, but Evans is shaping up to be there.
If you had a choice between Leighton Vander Esch and Rashawn Evans, which way are you going?
Well, I don't know if the Steelers will have a choice, but I would still lean Vander Esch in terms of what I would want. But, you know, in terms of the history and the interest and all that, you know, it's still some clear indicators that it could go Rashawn Evans.
Vander Esch seems to be one of those planet theory guys, at least from an athletic standpoint.
Yeah, yeah. What is he, what do you weigh in, 255, 256, and the numbers he tested, they're really strong. So that's the big thing with him.
And also, I'm sure you saw my study that I wrote up the past week about the Steelers, at least during the Kevin Colbert era, have never drafted a player in the first round who, in his last year of college, missed back-to-back games.
Now let me ask you.
We can sit here and say, obviously we do this for discussion, and I can say, well, Kevin Colbert's never drafted a player that's worn two oversized rubber bands on his left wrist, you know, during a workout, you know, kind of things. But I mean, you see where I was kind of going with that.
Yeah, I think it would apply for just a situation where a guy missed a large chunk of his final season where the tape wasn't available. But, you know, with Evans and Bates, it's only, I think, two games each that they missed. And it wouldn't be enough for me to say that they're not going to take Evans or they're not going to take Bates based off of that.
What about a kid like the cornerback out of Louisville, Jair Alexander? I mean, he missed quite a few games.
Well, I mean, I think there'd be a lot better reasons as to why they wouldn't go a cornerback, and I think that'd be pretty silly on the Steelers' part. But yeah, if it was something more extreme where you're missing half the season or more, then yeah, I could see that potentially being a factor. But when it's limited time and you do have a bigger body of work, you do have 2016 tape from Evans, I don't think that's going to prevent the Steelers from taking a guy.
When you think that we're almost 2 weeks out now and you look at really three guys in Rashawn Evans, Leighton Vander Esch, and Jesse Bates III. Those three guys sure do check a whole heck of a lot of boxes. Now, the Steelers reportedly brought in Leighton Vander Esch for a pre-draft visit this past Saturday. That, you know, I understand why that probably flew under the radar, because none of the people from Steelers.com were working that day, and you know, Leighton Vander Esch. I don't view it as them trying to sneak Leighton Vander Esch in. It's probably the kid's got such a full schedule that, you know, they had to get him in when they could get him in, and Saturday was probably the best day. But in your opinion right now, I mean, I know a couple of weeks ago we said which two or whatever, put a gun to your head, what would you choose? But I mean, I think when you look at needs and go back, and I also did that study on, it just so happens where best player available has intersected, you know, Kevin Colbert's need several years there. You know, you look at three guys, Rashawn Evans and Jesse Bates and Leighton Vander Esch. Boy, those three really check a lot of boxes, and quite realistically, I think Jesse Bates III checks the most boxes of the three.
Yeah, he absolutely does. You look at Power 5, underclassmen, production, pro day visit from Tomlin Colbert, pro day dinner with Tomlin Colbert, high character guy. I mean, the list could go on and on. I'm going to take Vander Esch out of my mind because I just don't believe he's going to be there. And maybe that's wrong on my part. Maybe that'll change as we get closer and some new information comes in. But with how hot his name is right now, and I mean, you have every team, I think, what was it, 12 or 24? I think all but one or two teams are having a visit scheduled with him. It would take a lot, I think, for him to fall all the way to pick 28 in Pittsburgh. So, you know, I think you have Evans, you have Bates. Bates does check the most boxes, but I still lean inside linebacker because, and Dave, you actually brought this up, I think last week you reposted the article, and I'd kind of forgotten about it when I did a study last year of kind of the pre-draft visits and the tendencies based off of that. And almost always, whatever position they bring in the most, they draft either the first or second round, which is pretty obvious. They look for their biggest need. They bring in the most guys there, and they draft accordingly. Well, you know, we're halfway through the pre-draft visits this year, and the Steelers have brought in six inside linebackers, the most of any position, and so far, as we know, only one safety. So that tells me they're going to go inside linebacker. And so I'm still, you know, having a good feeling about a guy like Rashawn Evans.
There's part of me that feels that it's still a little bit of a reach with Rashawn Evans. I mean, I think he's a top, I think he's a top 40 player. But, I mean, if you were to stack the board and eliminate need for the Steelers, you know, we're talking about the fourth, but, you know, realistically, we could be talking about the fourth best inside linebacker or off the ball linebacker in this year's class, in a class that Kevin Colbert said himself, there's not that many impact. So you understand the conundrum that I'm in here, you know, with look, I probably more than anybody else on the site read way too much into dissecting things that Kevin Colbert says, but man, it's still hard to ignore some of those things that he said dating back to the combine, and saying there's not a lot of impactful off the ball inside linebackers in this class, and yet to see the Steelers potentially turn around and draft what would essentially be, and you would think would be, the fourth inside linebacker on the board, kind of has you scratching your head, or me.
No, I'm right there with you, Dave. But that could also be a sign of they know that they have to get one early because the depth isn't quite as strong. And if they don't get that guy early at pick 28, then they might not find that impact player. So you could make a case that they want to get that guy as soon as possible because they might not have a good option in rounds 3 through 5. Now, I think you disagree a little bit. I definitely disagree with Colbert that this is a strong inside linebacker class. It's one of the stronger in recent memories. And you know, you have some really special guys that makes, you know, a fourth guy off the board, it sounds worse than it is because you still have a talented player. I disagree that Evans would be a reach. I think if you look 2-3 weeks ago, a month ago, you know, it was very debatable if Evans would even be there at 28. And so I think that value would be perfectly fine for the Steelers.
When you look at, we see guys like Jannard, Avery out of Memphis. Fred Warner is another one. Boy, his tape's exciting. Mm-hmm. Second or third round value there. You look at a guy like Malik Jefferson. Even I know you're. I'm trying to remember gauging kind of things.
I like him. Yeah.
I like Malik. I might be getting him confused, but wasn't there some sort of a character flag with him, with Malik? But when I go back and try to research him even further, I'm struggling to find out where the red flag was with him.
Yeah, I don't remember anything. I'd have to look into that a little bit more, but I don't remember any character issues with him.
I mean, he is a guy, when you think about it, I mean, what, 4 point, what did he run, like a 4.52, 40, mm-hmm. with I think 1.59, 10-yard split. Those are some decent numbers there, and he's only 21 and a half years of age. You know, to me, the value, I think, would be sits. Okay. Let me put it to you this way: Where do you foresee guys like Malik Jefferson and Rashawn Evans 3 years from now, career paths?
I mean, if I had a question.
It's impossible question, but I mean, from what you've seen of both these guys so far.
I mean, I think both can be successful. Now Jefferson's got to work on being more physical and defend the run better. He's a great athlete, sideline to sideline. It's probably a consistency factor with Evans. You know, I see a guy that's similar to probably C.J. Mosley. Maybe not quite that level. But he's a guy that can play inside, can play outside. That's big for Pittsburgh because they love moving their guys around on third down. And I see both as potential starters 3 years from now.
I do as well. And I want to. And by the way, the Steelers have brought. I believe he was 1-1. Malik was brought in, wasn't he?
Yes, he was one of the six.
Right. So you got him in for a pre-draft visit already. To me, I just. A guy like Warner, now it'll be interesting to see. I look back and I pulled a video up of Fred Warner talking at his pro day and pulled up pictures from his pro day. And I think the Steelers had somebody there, but I don't think it was Jerry Olsofsky or anybody of note you know, outside of maybe an area scout there at the BYU Pro Day. But to me, for those fans of Josie Jewell out of Iowa, man, he's already 23 years old. I'm not sure if you knew that with him. And then also, you know, they've already brought in Dorian O'Daniel, a guy that I think you commented on first way back at the Senior Bowl out of Clemson. He's closing in on 24 already.
That's more than his weight. He's 223. He's got to bulk up.
And then, of course, the Steelers were at the Ohio State Pro Day, you know, and Jerome Baker is a guy, you know, maybe a late day two, maybe a day three kind of guy there. They also brought in the kid out of Western Kentucky, Joel. I'm not even going to try to pronounce Joel's last name, but he's another kid, kind of a little bit undersized at 229 pounds. But, you know, another guy potentially late as well, too. But, you know, I think you hit on a good point that, you know, they're going to be bringing in, I think, when we tally this thing all up after the 30 visits are made, that inside linebacker is probably going to be the busiest of all positions that they brought in. That would obviously make sense. But I just can't get past. I'm worried about this whole Rashawn Evans thing and him not running all this time after that groin injury, I guess is what I'm getting at. I mean, the tape is obviously there. I just wonder, you know, if the value could be had a round or two later.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can. But again, the question is, does Culver believe that? And if we take what he said before about the class not being great, you know, to the letter, then that may indicate they want to go in the first round. But real quick, I just want to kind of tie a bow on my point I was making about the pre-draft visitors and whoever they bring in the most is who they take. You know, we'll repost the article or I'll revisit it at least and update the information. But last year, the most they brought in was inside line or outside linebacker with, what, 7 guys? And that was what they took. I think the second most they brought in was wide receiver. That's what they went in the second round. In 2016, the most of any position they brought in was safety with 11, took one in the second round. 2015, the most they brought in was 9 corners, took one in the second round. 2014, 8 linebackers, first round. 2013, 8 linebackers, first round. So there's a pretty clear correlation there that, you know, these are guys that they brought in to address need. And, you know, there's still 15 pre-draft visitors to go, but so far inside linebackers kind of running away with this thing.
Boy, they're bringing in, once again, they tend to do this every year. I don't know where it relates to the first batch or the second batch, but a few guys that could potentially go undrafted already already brought in. And I think a few people are kind of scratching their heads on that. But if you go back and kind of look at their history, they tend to bring in a few guys that end up going undrafted that they kind of want to get to know.
Yeah, Francis Callen last year was a UDFA they brought in. And like we talked about before, there's a lot of undrafted free agent spots that are going to be there after the draft, even after the signings that the team has made, which we'll get into. And to be blunt, Dave, you know, the last two undrafted classes for the Steelers have kind of sucked. It's been really underwhelming, and those guys haven't made an impact. And the Steelers are a team that are pretty well known for, you know, undrafted free agents coming in and making a big impact, even recently, whether that's Robert Gold, Ramon Foster, or, you know, guys like that. So I have my expectations set higher for the class this year.
I think, at least their futures guys have been decent, you know, as of last couple of years there. So, you know, if you can hit one of those every other year, either a futures guy or an undrafted guy, you know, I think you got to take your hat off and hand it to Kevin Culbert.
Yeah, I just want guys. I mean, how many of those guys are even here still? You know, I'm not even saying guys that are making big starting impact, but I mean, it was like Keith Kelsey's probably the only guy from last year, maybe him and Galambos, I guess.
Well, I mean, remember though, I think that's where you got to credit the futures guys as well,
sure,
too. You know, guys like Filer, you know.
Yeah, and Hilton and all them, yeah.
And Hilton, and I'm trying to think how many of those undrafted guys are left from last year. And it might just be Kelsey, huh?
Yeah, and I guess Galambos, if he counts, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, Galambos. Well, Malik Golden's back, right? What was he?
He wasn't. He was brought in after Damian Stafford retired.
Was he a futures guy or no? I'm trying to remember.
He was the camp guy that got brought in the day before camp started because Stafford left the team.
Okay. Let's see. Jake McGee, when did he come in?
During camp after Orndorff got hurt.
Okay. Yeah, it might be just Kelsey and Galambo said. But I mean, look, I mean, hey, it's a crapshoot when you're bringing in those on, you know, especially when you only bring in, Steelers only bring in normally about 10 or 11 undrafted guys, whereas other teams around the league sometimes 16, 17, 18 guys, you know,
that they
bring in there. And I'm sure because of the way and look, you know, agents aren't dumb. They're going to guide their
yeah.
you know, their client to what they deem is the best opportunity as well at certain positions. So, yeah, I think that plays a lot into it as well. Okay, let's see. Visits so far, and these came in yesterday. Reggie Bonifon out of Louisville. He's, I guess, this class's Antoine Randall L., if you will. More of an athlete than anything else. Started off his Louisville career at quarterback. Played some running back and wide receiver since then. I don't know if you watched the Louisville Pro Day, what was it, a week or two ago. But, boy, those receivers sure were dropping a lot of balls there. And I don't know if it was Bonifon in particular. But you know, first thing I kind of noted right out of the chute when Lamar Jackson was throwing is, man, he should have brought some better receivers with him because they were dropping a lot of footballs there. So Bonifon, probably a day three kind of guy at best, I would think, more of an athlete than anything else. John David Moore, J.D. Moore out of LSU. This is an intriguing guy. Fullback, H-back out of LSU, blocked. Well, you go back and watch a lot of things that Fournette and Darius Geist have done at LSU. A lot of times it was John David Moore leading the way there. So he's an intriguing guy. Obviously, he didn't touch the football a lot. I think he played quite a bit of special teams at LSU to boot. So, you know, could this be a seventh-round guy that the Steelers bring in as kind of protection? Because let's face it, you have Roosevelt Nix, but who else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think there's even anybody that would be considered a second fullback on this team right now.
You know, and you know, maybe if he goes undrafted, you could, you know, maybe he'd be one of those high priority free agents that you give one of the higher, you know, $10,000 signing bonuses to get him to come in. So I think of the guys, you know, obviously, you know, he's under the radar, but boy, when you put the name on to what he did at LSU the last couple of years, an impressive guy. And then the third guy they brought in was Richie James, a wide receiver out of Middle Tennessee State, probably round five, round six kind of guy potentially. I think the Steelers also had somebody at his pro day recently as well too, and it was just weird to see the full day of kind of offensive guys brought in there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of flips back and forth because it had been so, you know, defensively dominated. Yeah, you're looking at all day three guys. James would be the biggest name to talk about. I think a guy that could go as high as maybe the fourth round, but definitely in that kind of fourth to fifth range. He really impressed me at the combine. Had a good workout, caught the ball well, seemed like a really fluid guy. And in the study I did today for Steelers Depot, where we looked at, you know, combine guys and draft prospects that best fit what the Steelers look for, James was really close to checking every single box. So his athletic profile, I think, kind of fits what the Steelers like.
Of all the guys they brought in so far, I think there's a legitimate maybe chance of drafting, say, around round three or so, maybe Duke Dawson out of Florida, huh?
Well, I mean, I don't know how I feel about Duke Dawson. I mean, he's going to be a nickel corner. He's a big hitter. He can be over-aggressive. I liked him. I didn't love him. I like guys like, you know, MJ Stewart they brought in. I liked MJ Stewart a lot more. You know, they want to look for some nickel depth, I guess. I don't know what the thought process is there.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, Cody Sensabaugh might. I mean, that spot could be upgraded, right?
Sure.
You know, when you look at they've let William Gay already walk this off season, so there could potentially be one spot up for grabs at cornerback, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, there definitely could be, and, you know, could you see a 6th, 7th round pick at corner? I'd have no problem with that, of course. I just think, you know, if you take a guy like Dawson in the where he's probably going to go, maybe the 3rd round, I don't know exactly what you're playing with him is.
Are you a little disappointed with the visitor list so far?
No, not necessarily. I don't really set an expectation level to it. I just kind of, you know, whatever happens is whatever happens. There's 15 more to go anyway, so I'm not going to put any conclusions on it.
Yeah, and we're expecting a kid like Justin Reed to come in at some point. That's another one that's had a lot of evidently had a lot of visits lined up here. It'll be interesting to see.
Is Reed still on your radar for first round pick? I know you said before it'd be tough, but
you know, I still wonder about both these safeties. Talking about Reed Bates, you know, thinking that they're more along the lines of second round guys. You know, I could see them reaching a little bit further down for a kid like Bates, who has a little bit, you know, a lot cleaner, a little bit cleaner character. You know, not that Reed's got a bad character, but just his brother and all the baggage that could potentially come along with that worries me just a tad. Now, Reed did play, you know, the seven different positions at Stanford or whatnot. I view both these safeties as more of top 50 guys than I do top 30 guys, if that makes sense.
No, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but do you think he's on their board? I mean, just in terms of what the Steelers will do as opposed to what you want them to do?
I don't see why he wouldn't be, you know, okay. unless there's just something related to his brother that they don't like.
Yeah.
I mean, what's there not to like about him, you know?
Right. Well, I knew before you just said it would be hard to, because they weren't at his pro day, and we know the history there. You said it was hard to justify.
When you start applying the 30 different rules that we developed, you know, for Steelers, drafting a first round guys, which all it's going to take is one, you know, look, if they draft Leighton Vander Esch in the first round at 28th overall, we're going to be throwing a lot of our paperwork out the window, you know, and starting over there. But I mean, when you start kind of applying some of these unwritten rules, you know, not at his pro day, they've been to Stanford before to see David DeCastro, you know. Heck, they went to Tennessee last year. Now, obviously, they Dobbs and Sutton, and they wanted to sit down with Sutton. And, you know, they had an intricate sit-down with Sutton, you know, looking back at things that have been said last year. I mean, wouldn't you want to, if you were that high on a guy to maybe potentially go in the first round of defensive back this year, wouldn't you want to maybe spend a little bit of extra time with him? Now, obviously, if they bring him in, they could put him on the board and all like that. And, you know, without a doubt, they probably will. So I just found it a little bit. I mean, look, I understand they go to the Ohio State Pro Day every year. But, I mean, was it that loaded that one of them maybe could have went the other way, you know, to Stanford? You know, so, I mean, it just goes back to me saying these 30 unwritten rules that we have makes it kind of tough to put Reed in there at 28 overall.
Okay, that's fair.
Nat Burray, the Steelers ultimately brought him in and signed him. I don't think we've talked on the podcast since that happened. The missile's the appropriate nickname for him, but on the flip side, he has had a few, or he's had concussion issues in the past. But you want to talk about a guy that likes to hit and can get down the field on special teams, and a guy that just so happens to play the same position as Robert Golden did on the punt coverage team. This is a fit on you know, several areas, right?
Yeah, and you hit on the biggest point, Dave, and it's certainly no coincidence that Burhey was the up back on the punt team. And when you hear his name in the national media, Dave, you're going to hear special teams, core special teamer, replace Golden, but they're not going to really tell you what that means. Well, you know, Burhey played 260 special team snaps last year. That's almost the number that Golden had. He's a four-face guy. He's playing on everything but the field goal team. And most importantly is that he's going to replace Golden in that up-back spot, that personal protector, who's essentially the quarterback of the punt team. He's going to set the blocking scheme. He's going to hike the ball. He's going to make any adjustments they have to. He's going to make any judgment calls on fakes the way that Golden did. It's a really critical spot. And when things go wrong, it's usually on that up-back for, you know, not communicating well enough, effectively enough, or making a bad decision or screwing something up. So that's a spot that Golden's held down for man, it was like 5 years or something. And I mean, the guy just never missed a snap there. Even in camp, it was rare for him to not get a snap. And usually it was somebody that didn't make the team that kind of took his place. So that was a spot that I really circled, saying this team's got to replace. And you can put in a rookie, but, you know, you're going to have the growing pains that come along with a rookie there. So I was really happy about that move from that standpoint, because you get your immediate replacement. And then, yeah, you get a really big hitter, a high-energy guy. And, you know, it's a guy that seems like he has a good personality, too.
I mean, he's got some very limited, at least he's got some experience on the defensive side of football.
Yeah, most more last year than this year, but in a pinch, he can do it.
And there's the train. let's see, what other way do we have to? Oh, the Steelers also signed. We were talking, I think you and I, not too long ago, saying, boy, you know, it looks like they're an off season 90 man roster. Seems to be a little light when you consider that the team normally signs up around 10 undrafted free agents, and of course they have the seven draft picks today. Well, they're starting to catch up. It looks like they signed three more former undrafted free agent offensive linemen yesterday, and you know, I haven't gone deep into the tape on some of these guys. The names are Larson Graham, Joseph Cheek, and Parker Collins. Collins, I think, a center by trade. Cheek, I think he's I think he's in it more of an kind of an interior guy as well. Played some right guard, I think, mostly at Texas A&M when he was in college. And then a guy in Graham who went to Duquesne, was most recently with the Atlanta Falcons, last year. He predominantly played right tackle in college, but if you go and look at his preseason tape last year with the Falcons, kind of a third, fourth team center, if you will. So I know you don't like to use the term camp bodies when it comes to these guys, but you know, the odds are, you know, look, they needed some bodies, if you will, along the offensive line, and they have some now, and it looks like a couple of these guys have some versatility to them as well.
Sure, and you love versatility when camp happens, injury, you know, occurs, you're late in game, whatever the case is, you want to get a look somewhere else, because they always move these guys around in camp. The first week they'll play one spot, second week they're all, you know, the backups at least are all flipping, so that's going to be important. And yeah, I don't like the term camp bodies, but it is certainly for depth, and you know, you go into a training camp, you have to have, for Pittsburgh at least, I mean, it's almost always 15 offensive linemen, so you have three teams of five. And so you have to load up there. And the Steelers, you know, even when you lose Hubbard and you haven't really added anybody since, you do have to go get some offensive linemen. So you do have a camp, you know, roster, and from that standpoint. So, you know, no obviously huge signing here, but certainly some depth moves you're going to have to make to get your camp roster ready.
Yeah, and speaking of the roster right now, according to my records, they're at 72. As of the signings of those three offensive linemen. So when you add what the seven draft picks to that, you get what, 79. That leaves 11 undrafted free agents. I have a feeling we're going to have another signing, or maybe two, prior to these undrafted free agents being brought in. So that'll put us about where the team normally sits about this time of the offseason.
Yeah, yeah, usually the class is around that 10 to 11 range. So, yeah, nothing too – we thought it'd be a lot bigger class than usual. It seems like it's going to be about normal now, but that's fine.
All right, what do you think about some of the things Tom Bradley said in a recent sit-down with Missy Matthews?
You know, Dave, this, you know, I read into stuff Kevin Colbert says. This is me probably reading too much into what Tom Bradley says. It was a little weird. And, you know, the hire, I didn't hate the hire. I didn't love the hire in the first place. But, you know, Bradley basically said he didn't want to take this job. That Kevin Colbert called him, said, you know, we want you to come in an interview. And then Bradley told Missy Matthews, you know, basically that I didn't want to do it. And I said no, or I thought no, I wasn't going to go through with it. And then he said Tomlin called him, and I guess basically kind of convinced him, or I don't know if twisted his arm is the right phrase to use, to come in, and then obviously he took the job. So it's a little weird to start that off with an NFL job by saying, no, I don't want it, and now you're here. So, you know, I just worry about some of the inexperience at the NFL level and his own adjustment. And the whole situation just seems just a little off.
It was a curious hire.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, when it happened. I mean, it was out of left field as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's been coaching since 76, I think, but always at the college level, now making the jump. I mean, I'm not saying he can. Obviously, he's a smart guy, knows, you know, has forgotten more than I know, but yeah, a little different.
You know, you just wonder how, you know, being able to, you know, the college athlete, you know, how much difference is it, college athlete dealing with, you know, dealing with those as opposed to, you know, professional athlete? I mean, it's just something that Bradley, you know, really hasn't had to do, you know, at the NFL level. So, you know, it's most definitely going to be interesting to see how he's able to take, you know, and look, he's got a, you know, now that William Gay's gone, obviously they did bring in a guy like Burnett, you know, experienced veteran, and Joe Hayden, of course, has been around the block several times as well, too. But outside of that, I mean, you got a fairly young defensive back room.
Yeah, no, and I think that's probably part of the reason, you know, driving the hire, that you have a young group and a group that's kind of in a make or break in the year, and you want a good teacher, and I don't doubt that Bradley's a good teacher. You know, I'll read the quote real quick that I pulled up. You know, Bradley telling Missy Matthews, quote, "I never thought I would," whenever he was asked about if he'd coach in the NFL. "It just happened so suddenly the way it worked out. I got the call from Kevin to interview and wasn't going to do it. Then Mike called and said, let's sit down and talk, and kind of went around a little bit. Didn't take long. He said, do you want a job? That's not a hard decision." Well, apparently it was when you were first asked about it. But now he's here, and, you know, it's always hard to gauge the effectiveness of a position coach because, you know, work they put in is seen, you know, Monday through Saturday and not on Sunday. But, you know, we'll see how he runs camp, and we'll see how this team does.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of the OTAs, those will be getting underway here fairly soon. That'll be the first time that you know, Tom Bradley can actually, I guess, you know, start coaching his new group, if you will. Anything else? I mean, you know, he talked about, you know, whether, you know, he was asked whether he likes man or zone, and you know, he had so many words. He said, you know, he pretty much had to play more zone, I guess, during college because of the personnel that he had there, but he seems to be more of a man coverage guy. But I mean, look, you can be one or the other. It doesn't mean that you're going to predominantly play that.
Yeah, and obviously Keith Butler's still running the show, so what he wants is going to be the bigger factor than what Bradley wants.
All right. Anything else as far as kind of getting into more about draft prospect talk, or do we have anything news related? We covered the signings, you know, we covered what Tom Bradley had to say. We covered a couple of these pre-draft visitors and all. What about you know, take me through some of these prospects, you know, past the first round. We've kind of beat this first round up, you know, safety, inside linebacker. I don't want, you know, people are probably tired about me talking about, you know, potential for quarterback at this point right now. So, you know, talking about second and third round guys, where's kind of your head at right now? And could a wide receiver, you know, be part of that?
Yeah, it certainly could be. You know, my last mock draft I did, what, a week ago, I had James Washington go in the second round. So I think receiver could definitely be in the fold, just in the way it kind of surprised people last year. Now, again, I want to see how many they bring in for pre-draft visits, because that was kind of the driving force last year behind why I went receiver in the second round. I picked the wrong guy. I picked Chris Godwin. They went, obviously, Juju. But, you know, you're planning for the future, Martavis Bryant, assuming he's not going to be here in 2019. You know, and you can still find a way to get a rookie play time right away. You know, you rotate in guys enough, there's going to be likely an injury at some point, or, you know, that rookie who's fourth in depth chart becomes third, and now he's basically a starter. And then obviously you have a, you know, a big time role for him in 2019 once Brian is gone. So yeah, could you see a James Washington, a Dante Pettis from Washington? I like a lot, especially what he offers as a return man. You know, you could go with a later round guy like a Richard James, but yeah, there's certainly options there at receiver.
What do you remember about a guy like DJ Chark from your time in Mobile this year?
It was a strong week. Definitely showed that speed, and what he ran at the combine, I think a 4.34, something crazy fast like that. You know, maybe a bit of a one note vertical threat, but that was kind of LSU's offense. It was, you know, a lot of deep balls when they did throw the ball, as rare as it was down there. Yeah, Chark could be a guy that probably fits the profile pretty well.
Does because of his kind of, I mean, like he, you know, what was his best season there? What was it, like 40 something catches? Was it last year with Chark?
I'd have to look, but it's not because, many catches.
And because he is kind of more of a, I guess you would say, a vertical threat. I mean, is he a guy? Some people are trying to squeeze him, I think, in, or, you know, calling him a second round prospect. I view him potentially more as a third round guy. And, you know, being as how he played at, you know, big school at LSU, and because of kind of his skill set, I view it as more as matching that of Martavis Bryant. I think he'd be a prime third round candidate for the Steelers if he's still on the board there. And it looks like, I think I pulled up an article on him this past week too, about his character, and I think the kid's really got a strong character from what I remember on him.
Those are definitely excellent points, Dave. Yeah, I'm looking at his numbers now. Yeah, you're right. 40 catches last year was his high. Averaged 22 yards a catch, 3 touchdowns. Punt return work, too. I didn't realize that. He had 18 punt returns and 2 touchdowns last year. Averaged almost 11 per pop. So, you know, obviously, punt return is still an area his team probably wants to address. Eli Rogers' status is still in limbo, even if Tomlin wants him back. So, you know, even second round, I could see it. You know, I mean, once you kind of get second, third, if you want to get your guy, you get your guy. So, I mean, you could sell me on it. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Any later round kind of wide receivers, you know, guys? I mean, right now they don't have a fourth round pick. So, you know, if you didn't get one in the first three, barring some sort of a trade, then you're, of course, looking at, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh. I mean, are you still at the point right now where you would be surprised if they didn't draft a wide receiver?
Yeah, I'd certainly be more surprised if they did not draft a receiver than if they did. Beyond that, other names they could do. I mean, I've talked about Cedric Wilson Jr. a lot. Now, I kind of view him as a fourth-round guy. You know, he'd have to maybe fall a little bit to, you know, see the fifth round for Pittsburgh. But another vertical threat. Obviously, his dad played here. He doesn't have the 4.34 speed that Chark does, but he's a bigger body, a long strider that does a great job of tracking the football, making plays downfield. You have, Valdez Scantling from South Florida, who had a nice combine workout. Mitchie James, who they brought in, could be an option. Trey Quinn from SMU had another nice workout, mostly played in the slot. Alan Lazard from Iowa State, who had a fantastic combine. No one saw him putting the numbers he did. 4.55, 38-inch vert. I think his broad was also excellent. That's kind of versatile. Obviously a better athlete because he's like 6'6", 225 or whatever he is. You know, that could be the big target that Ben's always talked about kind of liking to have. So Lazard from Iowa State could be an option, maybe if he's there in the maybe even the third if you want to reach a little bit, but if he falls to the fifth, that's good value.
What he was at the Senior Bowl, right?
Yeah, he had it wasn't the best week, but it was okay.
And when you go back and you look at another thing that I wrote about, I think last couple weeks was Steelers and All-Star game participants. You know, especially if they're seniors. I mean, odds are good if the Steelers draft a you know, any player, any position that you know is coming out after their senior year. Probably a good chance that player played in one of the All-Star games. Mm-hmm. And when you look at guys like Chark, obviously James Washington, was Pettis at one?
I think he's a junior. I think.
I could have sworn that Pettis was a.
I mean, he definitely wasn't at the Senior Bowl though.
Who?
Pettis.
Well, he would have been a senior then if he's at Senior Bowl.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying he wasn't, so I think he's a junior. No, he's a senior. You're right, but he wasn't at the Senior Bowl.
Do you remember if he was at any of these other All-Star games?
I'd have to look. I'd imagine he, unless he was hurt, but
like the Shrine, yeah, or something.
I don't know for sure where he was at.
Yeah,
I think I'm reading he was a Senior Bowl invitee. I think there was an injury that had to have held him out.
He received declined due to injury, according to what Dane Brugler wrote here. Left ankle, it looks like, because he did not work out at the combine, so that would probably explain that. Final two seasons at Washington for him were 53 catches for 822 yards and 63 last year. For 761 yards, so he could be, you know, potentially a guy, on the radar for them. And as
I said, go look at his return stats. What were those? Those were crazy numbers.
Yeah, I don't have those pulled up in front of me. Deshaun Hamilton out of Penn State. I think he was
Shrine and Senior Bowl call up. Yeah.
Senior Bowl guy as well too, and I think a few people have tried to link the Steelers to the kid out of Texas A&M, Christian Kirk, an underclassman though, as well. Who would are you expecting them? I mean, if they addressed offensive line, it's going to be seventh round, right?
Yeah, I would late day three, sixth or seventh round, and likely more versatile guy that's kind of in the same mold of Chris Hubbard.
If barring Darius Geis, if they don't grab Darius Geis in round one, you expect them to wait, right?
I would start, again, for me, I wouldn't start the conversation until round three, because I think round three is when I start saying even if a guy kind of sits or has a part-time role in year one, I'm okay with that. So I think it's Geis or bust in the first two rounds, and from there, you know, we'll see how the board goes.
At any other positions, talking about late round guys that you've, like edge rushers, I still kind of struggle, you know, to find guys I like after, you know, that could be had in round five or so.
Yeah, I mean, I probably need to do a little bit more work there to round things out. Kylie Fitz from Utah was a guy that I liked, had a decent Senior Bowl week. I could definitely see the fit there. Yeah, I can't think of anyone else real quick. I want to go back to receiver just real briefly. Jamon Morton.
While it's on my mind, talking about these edge rushers, mm-hmm. our buddy out of Oklahoma, how do you pronounce the name? Ogbonya or Okonokwo, 23 years old already. I finally found as they tracked his age down, and I was kind of disappointed that.
Did he just turn 23, or is he going to be 24? And
when is his birthday here? According to Dane Brugler, it is coming up here pretty soon. He's about to turn 24 is his evidently his birthday. So that would make him 23 very soon.
Okay. All right. Well. You know, second round and on, I'd be curious to do a study. I'm curious. Maybe that's a good thing for us to do, see ages. And you know, we know the first round trends. They usually go underclassmen. But what about the rest of the draft? I still want him, though, because I think he can be just a flat-out pass rusher. And this team needs one in the worst way.
He can definitely – when you go through his sacks, which I did earlier mm-hmm. during this offseason, they were impressive. And so is the fact that he probably should have had about six more of them.
Yeah.
You know?
He's probably got one of the most impressive sack reels of anybody that's not named like Bradley Chubb.
Yeah. Have you watched much of the kid out of Duke? I mean, out of Wake Forest, Duke, Ejiofor?
No, I saw some people talking about him the other day, but I haven't personally sat down and actually watched him.
And then there's Nwosu out of USC, another intriguing guy, as well. And, of course, you know, I really still like Jeff Holland if he could be had, you know, fifth round or so, but if the Steelers had a fourth round pick, I think that would be a great spot to put Jeff Holland in. I'm unsure he lasts much longer than that. And another guy, speaking of ages and these edge rushers, I know a lot of people are kind of high on Sam Hubbard out of Ohio State as well, and he's he's 20, about to turn 23 as well too, and I didn't realize he was, you know, that old. 6:29 is when his 23rd birthday is.
Yeah, no, Hubbard had a great three cone time. I think 6.84 Ohio State. Productivity, and that was a guy kind of kicked around as potential first rounder. For Pittsburgh. I know that his 40 time was really bad, but according to him, he hadn't trained that hard at it. Hadn't had much time to train, so I think he ran a 4.96, which is going to give a whole lot of Jarvis Jones comparisons, but I think there's a caveat to that. So, you know, could Hubbard be in the mix? That's a name we haven't mentioned too many times. You know, that's not impossible.
Yeah, first round, you think?
Yeah, I'd say first round. I think he's viewed as kind of a, has been at least for most of this draft process, viewed as a mid to late-ish first round pick.
His 16.5 sacks, I need to go pull those, I think. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen like three of them so far, and they shouldn't be hard. Being as he played at Ohio State, shouldn't be hard to find. I was a little bit surprised nobody, or at least that I could see down at the Florida State Pro Day to look at Josh Sweat. You know?
Yeah, I felt the same way because that was the guy I thought could really be in the mix. But what about Lorenzo Carter from Georgia? Edge guy, maybe a little off-ball work at his pro day. I don't know about a dinner, but you know, I kind of circle a sleeper that no one talks about, Lorenzo Carter from Georgia.
I think the upside's there with him, but I'm not sure if he's a guy I would like in the first round.
What, the lack of production kind of scares you?
Yeah, lack of production scares me. Okay. I think, and you know, you look at the Steelers' kind of history. They like a little bit of production in there. I think, you know.
Yeah.
When it comes to these edge rushers, although you know, look, I mean, Bud Dupree didn't necessarily set the world on fire, right? You know,
Colbert said they looked too much at production with Jarvis, so maybe they kind of changed their approach a little bit, but waited a little less.
Well, if they would have looked at Steelers Depot and looked at every all of his sacks, talking about Jarvis Jones going back during his college career, they would have probably seen that the stats didn't match, you know, didn't match what he, you know, was at the time there. So that's obviously a story for another day. All right, what else you got as far as, I mean, look, I mean, it is boiling more and more down to, you know, inside linebacker safety. I mean, it's the same thing we've been talking about all offseason. Inside linebacker safety, you know, wide receiver, potentially a running back. Would you give, I know which way, and I already interrupted you once, so make sure you go back to the topic that you wanted to get back to. But what about Daron Payne as an option in the first round?
Yeah, I've thought about it briefly. I know people are going to point to Art Rooney II's comments about needing to be better against the run. I know that I'm assuming there was a pro day dinner with him because Tomlin dined with, what, 8 Bama guys. I'm going to guess that, you know, it wasn't just Josh Frazier in backup, so I'm assuming Payne was there. I just don't know why you do it. I don't know where you're going to get the snap count from. Is Payne that great of a pass rusher that's going to compel you to take Hargrave off the field or something like that? So I think that'd be a dumb pick for the Steelers.
And it's not like me. He's more of a 3, one and a 0 technique than he is a guy on the outside, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could play him at the 3 a little bit in some packages. You're going to naturally do some of that. But is he a better pass rusher than Hargrave? No. Is he a better athlete than Hargrave? No. Is he a better run stuffer? Maybe you can get there, yeah, but it's a whole Andrew Billings trap. How we thought Billings was going to be the guy, and teams didn't view him as a good enough pass rusher, so he's going to fall.
Is he going to be a guy that people have going in the first round that ultimately goes in, say, the late second?
It's possible because, again, you know, is there enough pass rush value? You know, Vita Vea, he's viewed enough as a good enough pass rusher because of the size and the surprising athleticism that he has for a guy that frame that you can justify, you know, a top 20 pick on that. With Payne, wouldn't surprise me to see him slip out of the first round.
They're trying to, it feels like with Payne, they're trying to shoehorn him in there because, I mean, even if you look at, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he only had 5 total tackles for loss during his career at Alabama and just 3 sacks.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right.
You know, yeah, he was probably good at 2 gapping and you know, helping, you know, free up your linebackers and all like that against the run. But is that enough for you to be in the first round?
Right, and when you have Hargrave, how does the snap count work at that point when you have Payne in the mix? I mean, they're each going to get 11 snaps a game. You know, that'd be ludicrous.
Any of these other defensive linemen? I mean, we don't expect Vita Vea out of Washington to fall to the Steelers. Even if he did, he's 23.2 years old already too. It's fun when you get this report from Dane Brugler that some of these guys that you've had trouble finding the ages on, you know, you actually able to get their true ages and things like that. It really opens your eyes to, well, you wonder if the Steelers would take a guy, because the Steelers now in the age of this fifth year option, I mean, you know, if given a chance, they'd like that. That's why they like these underclassmen now coming out at 20 and 21 years old, because if they feel they made the right choice, they're automatically going to get that fifth year option out of them and potentially a complete second contract out of them as well.
Yeah, what is it? I think, I forget the number. Four of the last five picks have been underclassmen. Dupree's the exception. I forget the exact, I forget ages, but in terms of junior, senior, it's been junior focused.
You know, I was working on the ages of these guys in a spreadsheet here just recently, and I can't get that pulled up right now. Let's see if I can pull it up.
I mean, they've been young because there's some juniors. I think at least four of the five. I think DeCastro, no, he was a junior. I think Hayward was the last senior before Dupree. So from Hayward on, it's been all juniors and Dupree.
Let's see if I can pull this up real quick here, the ages, if I have it here. I'm not finding it. Crap.
Well, I'll talk while you, if you can look that up. Also, I'm going to give you another homework assignment after that. I'm curious about Fred Warner's age, if anyone has that, because the BYU guys are impossible to try to get their ages for. Other defensive linemen that I would like, you know, the class isn't the best. They brought in B.J. Hill from North Carolina State. It's probably going to be taken before the Steelers get to that point. Justin Jones, another guy from NC State that I thought had a good Senior Bowl week, a better athlete than his frame indicates. And Puna Ford from Texas, who was a combine snub. I've seen some good tape on him. Inconsistent, but he's got good hand use. I think there's enough there as a pass rusher and as an impact player that he's more than just your traditional kind of zero tech that can't do anything else but stuff to run. So I thought Puna Ford was interesting as a, you know, potential fifth-round pick, hopefully, maybe. And then, of course, Joshua Frazier still sitting there, who we've talked about endlessly, of the Dunbar connection and the pro day dinner and all that, that you could certainly see. I think he'd go in the fifth, but most people will mock him in the seventh.
I don't have that. The spreadsheet's downstairs on the computer down there, so I don't have that in front of me. But you did ask about Fred Warner. Looks like 11/19/1996, so 21.4 years of age. So he's according to what Dane Brugler here has. I mean, you're talking about a guy with 4 years. I mean, he looks like he played in 49 games and made 42 starts at BYU, yet is 21, you know, not even 21 and a half years of age, if that is indeed correct. And, you know, I mean, we're talking about Dane Brugler here, and, you know, normally his stuff, you know, has been spot on. I mean, even if he was 22 and a half, you know, with the production that he has, really makes him a because of now he played mostly strong side, I think, at BYU, right?
Yeah, I think, but he's got the athleticism that he can move. I'm just surprised he's that young, because usually those guys, BYU guys, are like 23, 24, 25, because they go on their mission trips. So I don't know if he did one or what, but that's good news for the Steelers.
Okay, any thoughts on the rugby player that they're supposedly going to bring in?
What's his name? He's got a hard to pronounce name, doesn't he?
Jordan Malata? Malata?
That's not too bad. Well, he's what, 6'8", 345, that ran a 40 reportedly at 4.9. So, hey, I'll take a look. I mean, it doesn't hurt.
Yeah, I mean, for a guy that's able to move like that, if you compare his kind of his pro day measurables to some of these tackles that were at this year's combine, I mean, he definitely matches up when it comes to them. Now, obviously, I mean, look, it seems like every year now we have a rugby guy, right?
And like 10 basketball guys too.
Yeah, so you know, you would think that this kind of guy like this is going to end up going undrafted or at best seventh round, and one would think that, you know, he's a guy that I mean, why would you spend a draft pick on a guy that probably immediately going to get that, you know, right out of shoot's going to go to the practice squad, you know?
Yeah. Now, just to be clear, because people were asking about him, whoever he plays for, we're looking at offensive tackle, right, with him, likely.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine anything else. I think some of the drills he went through at the pro day that there's tape of, it was kind of tackle drills.
Okay.
Kind of, you know, the mirror type stuff. I mean, geez, at 345, I mean, I suppose you could turn him into a tight end, but he'd have to lose a little bit, quite a bit of weight there. So I would imagine that teams would probably be considering him as a tackle.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I agree. Definitely. Real quick, I want to go back to the receivers I was mentioning earlier. Just two names, well, one name and then the stat. But Jamon Moore from Missouri, who I know the Steelers met with at the Senior Bowl. He came really close to hitting every box in our study. He missed it by the 40 time by just that much, but he tested really well athletically and is a vertical threat, tracks the ball well, and is a willing and good blocker. And then Dante Pettis, just because we mentioned him earlier about, you know, the production as a receiver and, you know, what he could bring to the table. Return guy, punt returns. 9 punt return touchdowns in his career, 4 last year, average over 20 yards per return. That'd be big. You know, you talk about guys that can come in and help you right away. Dante Pettis can do that.
What was your stat on first? How far back with Colbert and first and second round draft picks have been Power 5 guys?
2004 was last time they didn't do either, Ben and Coakley.
And that's first and second round.
First and second, yeah. They'll do a small school in the third round, or at least non-Power 5 in the third round. They've done that with Archer, Emmanuel Sanders, Hargrave. But first and second, it's all been Power 5.
Well, and technically, Stephon Tuitt was not a Power 5 guy.
Yeah, David Todd was yelling at you. I'm yelling at you about that. I counted a Power 5.
Okay. I mean, he was obviously, I mean, we're talking about a major independent at the time.
Yeah.
And at the time, Notre Dame was all that still, too, weren't they?
Yeah, that they were playing good. They weren't playing, the MAC.
So if we were to look at wide receivers, well, I mean, a guy like Moore, though, is he out of Missouri? Do you consider him a second, or as high as a second round guy? Or is that pushing it?
No, I wouldn't do second. I mean, third at the earliest, and yeah, I would go more third. You know, they had that fourth. I wish they had that fourth. Now I'm mad about it because that'd be a great spot for him.
Yeah, it really would be a great spot. You know, Anthony Miller is a guy that's impressive out of Memphis, but obviously he's another guy a little bit older, believe it or not. You know, he redshirted, I think, in 2013 at Memphis, and then 2014 I don't think he played because of injury. So, you know, it's caused him to come out. He was born 10-9. 1994, so in October he'll already be 24 years old.
Yeah, I'm just curious. So you're doing an age study? Because I'd love to see that, just about where they draft guys and their ages and stuff.
Well, I mean, what are you looking for as far as the first round guys or all the draft picks?
Well, I guess all, but maybe just second or third. First round, I mean, we kind of know they're generally going to be on the younger side for the reasons you stated, and we know their history there. But I'm curious, second and third round, is that continue? Do they go for younger guys? They go with seniors, obviously, but they do the 22-year-old senior, or do they draft guys that are 24?
Well, obviously, Juju's going to throw some recent numbers out of whack. You know?
Well, not even as an average, then. Just list it, and we can just kind of see how many were 22 and younger, older 22, however we set it up.
All right. Well, I have the all of them. What I did is I pulled the birth dates of the first-round guys, and then I have years, months, and days they were in age come September 1st of that year.
Okay, that's fair.
So that way you kind of get everything on kind of on an even keel, because the draft could come a week earlier, a week late, you know. Mm-hmm. So calculating their age on draft day kind of, you know, I mean, you're only talking a matter of days anyway, but to have some sort of uniformity. So maybe I'll pull the second round guys, as well. Okay, any other kind of prospects you want to talk about that we haven't hit on?
Just real quick, source told me yesterday, and this is we're talking a likely undrafted player, but just keep an eye on Weber State's defensive lineman McKay Murphy. Steelers were at his pro day. He had a really strong workout, and he was sick too. I was told he was like throwing up the night before, lost 5 pounds. Still had a great workout, ran a 4.95, coming in at 6'3", 295. But so that's a guy to look at. You know, undrafted, likely pick for the Steelers.
Does Ronnie Harrison still play into potential for you as a first-round guy?
Yeah, he does. I forget about him more than I should, and it's probably true of a lot of other people. His name should probably, truth be told, should be talked about more than it is.
I mean, he's a guy right now, 21. I mean, you want to talk about a guy that we just don't talk a lot about. It's Ronnie Harrison, because, I mean, right now he checks a lot of boxes when it comes to Steelers and first-round picks.
Is he an underclassman?
Yeah, he came out a junior. 6'2", 207, 4.58, 40 time. A lot of people are trying to put him in that second round category because of that, 40 time. But you got to remember that he's more of a probably regarded more as a box player than a deep center fielder, right?
Yeah, that's I agree.
I mean, Brugler has him as his second rated safety, you know, in this year's draft, ahead of guys like Bates and Reed. So, you know, for whatever that's worth there, but maybe he's a guy that, I mean, when you look at, let me ask before we get out of here. When it comes to potential guys at 28, are there any? Do you find yourself overly excited?
Yes and no. I think it's just the uncertainty of it. And I mentioned this in the past that, you know, I think this year is as wide open in the first round as it's been in quite some time for Pittsburgh. And so it's hard to find just the one or two names where you say, you know, this is going to be the guy if he's there. I don't really have that. At least I don't have that yet. I think there's a lot of talent there. I mean, those are certainly guys I'm excited about. I'm excited about Justin Reed. I'm still excited about Rashawn Evans. You know, even Jesse Bates I'm not as excited about, but, I can get it. So maybe not at that level in the past, but, I mean, I'm not excited about it. I'll tell you that.
You can see Darius Geis being the pick, huh?
I can see it from a value standpoint because I believe if he's there, he's going to be potentially their highest graded player on the board. They're not looking at any other running backs high, which says it's not necessarily a need thing or a desire to get a top running back, but it's a value thing and how impressed they are with Geis. So, you know, would I agree with the pick? Not entirely. Do I want it to happen? Not entirely, but can I see it? Sure.
And you're still nowhere. You don't want nothing to do with any of these quarterbacks, do you?
Not a thing. That's someone else's problem.
Do you think a guy like Rudolph goes just earlier than the Steelers pick, just for the sheer fact that he is a quarterback? And, you know, if this were any other, you know, not that it makes it right, but, you know, if this was any other year, you know, is he a guy that would a lot of people be considering a guy that would go in the first round? I mean, is it because of this class, the talent in this class, is that what's making him? Look, I mean, how many times in the past have we seen quarterbacks get drafted in the first round at probably third round grade? Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole supply and demand. I guess what I'm getting at is any other year is Mason Rudolph a guy that we're slam dunking to go in the first round?
Probably, yeah. I mean, four quarterbacks in the top 10 this year is going to push some other guys down. Do I think Rudolph goes above Pittsburgh? If someone trades up, I think someone gets Rudolph by trading up for him. I'll put it that way. Someone in the early second round that didn't get the quarterback in the first is going to come back up. Is that ahead of Pittsburgh? Is that at Pittsburgh behind? I mean, it used to say. But I think he does go in the first round, and I believe somebody trades up to get him.
Final thoughts on the Patriots deal. Do you think that the Patriots, now that they've made the deal, they got two first-round picks, two second-round picks, and a third-round pick. Are they done, do you think, at this point? Do you think they'll move up? And if they move up, are they going to go up and get a quarterback?
I think they do make a move. I think it is probably up. I know everyone's saying quarterback. I don't get why they would do that. Maybe that's just my own bias about don't take a quarterback if you have one. You know, Brady's still going to be there for a little bit. I think they do make a move. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not for a quarterback, though. It's for somebody else.
All right, Cleveland, Sam Darnold.
A lot of reports about Josh Allen now. I don't know if you saw. I think it was Brugler today saying he's hearing Josh Allen name a lot more to Cleveland, which I don't know.
Which way would you go?
I'd go.
And I know you haven't studied. I mean, there's no really need for us to extensively study this quarterback class as Steelers fans, at least we don't think, you know, outside of...
I would take Darnold over Allen. I'd take Josh Rosen over all of them, though, to be honest.
Okay, interesting.
Who's
okay, any
quarterback? Let me throw it back at you.
I thought Darnold should have stayed. I mean, if you're going to let... I'm okay with Darnold being the guy, but don't throw him out there right away. I wouldn't.
Okay. Well, who's your top quarterback?
I would probably go Rosen.
Okay.
I would probably go Rosen. I think I think it's going to be one of those two. I think. I mean, Josh Allen just feels more like, he feels like the third or fourth guy. It's going to, you know, a guy like Baker Mayfield and David Todd, I think, talked about this on the last show. I mean, you can't help but look down the list and see 6005 next to his name.
Yeah,
you know?
But Do you think about that when Russell Wilson or Drew Brees throws the football?
No, not now. I thought about it before those guys were drafted.
There you go. You think about how tall Brock Osweiler is? You know, it doesn't bother me that much.
There is that bias that creeps in, that height bias that you know, I think creeps in your head. I mean, look, I mean, Baker Mayfield definitely showed he could get it done at Oklahoma. So,
who would you take, Mayfield or Allen?
Of which one I'd take?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think Mayfield.
Yeah, I'd probably take Mayfield by a hair.
Okay. What about Darnold? I'm just basically asking you to rank the quarterbacks then.
Well, I mean, I you know, if you told me that Darnold can sit a full season, I'd be okay with him.
Okay, so your list is basically Rosen, Darnold, Mayfield, Allen.
Yeah, I mean, it's right there with, I mean, and look, you can make arguments for any of those four to be, you know, above the others. So I think it, you know, and now I think where the discussion gets in there is that, you know, five and, you know, six with Rudolph and Lamar Jackson and all like that. You know, I think that's where you could have probably the better discussions at. So, but it, to me, it ends definitely after those six, and that's it. I mean, I saw one mock draft had, and I think it was even Brugler, what it had Mike White in the third to the Steelers.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't like that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, if you're going to get one in the first. If not, then especially the way that mock went, I think the right move would have been to go inside linebacker at that point, for according to what he had. All right. Any other final thoughts before we get out of here? Probably not, huh?
No, I think that's everything.
All right. We may manage to fill up some time today. In the meantime, and we are still efforting Dave T. I cannot get an email back from Dave T. So we are efforting Dave T. still. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow my co-host David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Kozora at Alex_Kozora. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button upper right navigational bar. And until Friday, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.